This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Hord Tipton. He's the executive director of an organization that some listeners know and some don't. It's called ISC Squared. Good morning, Hord. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm doing just fine.
You've been around the path a little bit here. You've been in the agencies and worked for yourself and worked for several different organizations. Maybe you could start off the interview here with giving listeners a little bit about your background and your experience with information security.
Well, I am officially, I guess, a chemical engineer. Graduated several years ago. Did some work with Swift Chemical, also with Union Carbide. Worked in the nuclear program in the national labs. Moved over into the federal government several years ago. Spent 27 years in the federal government. No more than 5 years in any one particular job, so I got the opportunity to move around a lot and spent a whole lot of time on the business side of the house, managing grazing, minerals, oil and gas, forestry. A lot of exciting things: firefighting, law enforcement.
Well, that says, what things have you not done? Let me give you a short list.
That's probably a better question. John. I take a lot of pride in saying, you know, I've never done the same job more than 5 years. If I haven't done what I want to do in 5 years, I figure it's probably time to move on, or somebody's going to run me off one way or the other.
Now, the advantage to having that wide skill set is that you must be pretty good at threat assessment, because you've been in situations where bad things have happened or you've seen something coming down the road it could happen. And I think that's given you good experience in information technology. And you work with is it a nonprofit, ISC Squared? Is it a nonprofit organization?
ISC Squared is a not-for-profit. It's incorporated as a C6. Mm-hmm. And we also have a C3 foundation that is now affiliated with it as well, which is our charitable arm.
And the organization can be found at isc2.org. There's 3,500.orgs in this town. This is one of them. And people are scratching their heads listening, going, wait a minute. I don't know about ISC2, nonprofit. Oh, and now I'm going to use the magic word that everyone's going to know. They're responsible for awarding or assigning the CISSP designation, aren't they?
That's correct.
Yeah. And if you know much about security, you realize that CISSP is a very prestigious accomplishment, because the way I understand it, they put you in a room with a server and they say, we'll come back in 8 hours, and you got to fire up a server and connect to different things. You really have to know your stuff, don't you?
Well, ours is not quite that way. We're moving in that direction. It is a very rigorous 6-hour examination, and it also requires 5 years of work experience in two technical domains. So it's a very technical credential, and it basically is a validation that you possess skills in the areas that are critical to IT security.
My guess is that 10 or 15 years ago, people talk about IC security, and they worry about boot sector viruses and some funny things, and people would get some news. And after 9/11, then all of a sudden we have FISMA kicks in, and people start getting serious about it. And then the proliferation of the internet and mobile devices, all of a sudden, people with in-depth knowledge of security are in demand now.
Very much so. As a matter of fact, it's been reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I believe 2 years now, that the unemployment is virtually 0%. Our research worldwide shows this to hold true on a global basis as well. The salaries are escalating very, very rapidly in it. There's a lot of pirating going on between companies and governments and companies and contractors for the best talent. And certification as that validation and distinguisher between those who claim to be security experts and those who actually can prove it is becoming more and more important.
Yes, it's one of the representations. If you see someone's LinkedIn profile and it lists all these accomplishments, you got to wonder, scratch your head, and you know it's funny. Mm-hmm. When I got my master's degree, I don't know, 40 years ago, I mean, it was an actual piece of paper, and you went to a university for 2 years, you lived there, and you wrote a big paper, and then you got this degree. I mean, it was substantial. And I think now it's getting very fuzzy about what a certification is, what it isn't. With this, I got an online degree on this, and it's getting difficult to see where the rubber meets the road with someone who has a skill set or does not have a skill set.
That is an excellent point, and one that we have to explain quite often. You can get a piece of paper or a certificate off of a website by watching a one-hour webcast. That can be very confusing. So employers need to know quite a bit about what certification really is. We base ours against an accreditation program. We're accredited by ANSI. We're also accredited to international standard 17024, as they call it. And these are the type of things that one has to look for, because there are criteria that your certifications, your examinations must follow before you can maintain that that accreditation.
I'm probably one of the few people who've been in the ANSI office in New York City, sat down and talked to Mike Pitosa and his staff up there. So I'm very familiar with ANSI. I'm familiar with standards, the folks up at NIST, ISO, IEC, and the standard 17024. I think some listeners are very familiar with, and some aren't. Essentially what this is a group of both national and international folks getting together and trying to work in the area of quality assurance. And they're saying, look, if it's a gallon, it's a gallon. Here's how we're going to measure it. And if it's the color red, it's the color red, and this is how we're going to measure it. Or if paint has lead in it, either it does or it doesn't. So there's certain criteria that have to be met, and that's what ANSI and ICE was all about. And it can be applied to the world of information security as well, can't it?
It absolutely can. You have to have you have to have your benchmarks. You have to have a common body of knowledge that, even if not standard, is widely accepted, it's vetted, and it's tried and tested. And that's really where the ISC squared credentials come in through the accreditation and have gained the reputation as the gold standard in certification.
Yeah, it really helps to define an information security professional, a bachelor's degree from a accredited institution in computer science may give you the basic building blocks. But I'm sure there's students out there that really don't know much about firewalls or they just in general know about it. Just as I'd throw that topic out. I think with the CSSP, it proves that, in fact, you have hands-on knowledge, you know exactly what it's all about. How long has the organization been around, and how long have you been awarding this certification?
We've been awarding the certification since about 1993. The organization was essentially formed in 1989, and The first certification was the CSSP. It was formed by a bunch of visionary people sitting around a table, writing on napkins. Lynn McNulty does come to mind, my late friend, was right there prophesizing what was actually going to be needed.
That's what's interesting is back in 93, that was, ladies and gentlemen, this was before Netscape. This was before this was when you were on the internet, you were FTPing manually with keystrokes. And you were doing IRC chats manually, which preceded Twitter by, I don't know, 15 years. And people sat around and said, no, everyone's going to have a computer at home. No, there's going to be a lot of stuff happening on the internet, and we better make sure we're secure. We better, you know, lock the doors before any other people move into the neighborhood. I mean, people like Lynn were visionaries.
Absolutely. And we continue to try to look and to keep our organization affiliated with people who are forward thinking like that. And it's actually built into keeping our credentials fresh and relevant and making sure that they embrace the latest technologies. We try to look ahead as to what the next greatest toy is going to be that the business embraces, that puts on our doorstep that has to be secured. So it's the more members we have, and we're now at 86,000, we use every single one of them as volunteers to give feedback from the companies that they work with. And actually, I think we can say we have credential holders in all Fortune 500 companies at this point. So it's a wonderful feedback mechanism that keeps the integrity and the freshness of all of our credentials very, very high.
In 1993, I sent a tape to National Public Radio, and I said, you should do a show on computers. They wrote me a letter back. I have it framed at home. And they said, computers will never be a cultural icon. Quite a letter. Let's take a little break. When we come back, talk more about thousands of security professionals in hundreds of countries, and we'll talk about how many are in the federal government and the job titles they have and what they're responsible for, especially in making this transition to the cloud. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Hord Tipton, Executive Director of ISC Squared. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Hord Tipton, Executive Director for a nonprofit called ISC Squared. These are the folks that award the CISSP designation. And if you look at Hord's business card, it's about a mile long because after his name, he has CISSP, ISSEP, CAP, CISA. It's almost a BIGDEAL we got going on here. What are all these things stand for? CAP? What's all this stuff?
A CAP stands for a Certified Authorization Professional. Used to be a certification and accreditation. This is a credential that's designed specifically for the U.S. government, and it shows our organization's ability to work with a government to solve a particular problem. There is a requirement from, I believe it's FISMA, to have all your systems certified and accredited before you can actually put them into operation. That process has several intricate steps, and it needs someone with training and proven credentials in being able to guide the process.
And CISA, what's that? I'm not familiar with that one at all.
Well, CISA is a credential that I obtained after I got my CISSP. And it stands for Certified Information Systems Auditor. And that one actually is issued from our colleagues over in Osaka. And I was audited so often by our inspector general and others on our federal systems that I wanted to be more familiar with the auditing principles, auditing techniques, and having been on the receiving end of that so many times, I found it to be quite a compatible thing. And I think all of this leads to the notion that we really don't have any one certification. There is no silver bullet out there, no set of letters that will designate and solve all of a person's problems. And we now have over 80,000 CISSPs, and they're asking questions like, what do I do next? Which is a very, very interesting concept because it's continuing education, and that's our definition of a professional. So we have concentrations. You'll notice I have an engineering. The EP is the engineering professional. In order to obtain that, you must also have a CISSP first as a prerequisite, and that's a concentration that's built on top of that. We also built that particular credential in partnership with NSA. And again, it shows the flexibility of an organization just as a nonprofit to sit down and to build what you need.
My wife is a Latin teacher. She just finished a master's degree, and one of the classes was testing and evaluation. And from her perspective is, how can you help out a student unless you evaluate them? Okay, that's simple. Most of us just know that. But let's apply this to the federal world. Well, we have this thing called FISMA, came about in 2002. What FISMA would do is they'd waltz into your office and they would try to give you an evaluation or an audit or maybe a test to see if you comply with certain standards. The objective wasn't to be a pain in the CIO's neck. The objective was to increase security for the federal government. And I think the whole idea behind FISMA is strong and been around for 10 years. Now we have a few changes taking place in FISMA. Maybe you can give us your perspective on FISMA and FedRAMP and this whole big switch to more continuous monitoring.
Yes, FISMA, and I guess I should point out first here, I am not really a critic of FISMA, although I have heard a lot of criticism about it. FISMA, I think, was a real eye-opener. It kind of looked under the hood of security programs within the agencies, and admittedly, it was a benchmark of a point in time of the status of what your security profile and your environment actually looked like.
It was a snapshot.
It was a snapshot. Also built into the NIST guidelines and from FISMA is a requirement for continuous monitoring, which keeps you looking at your systems on some frequency other than just once a year. Unfortunately, resources, technical know-how, and the skills to do that did not exist at the time FISMA was launched, and probably don't to the extent that it's really needed today. So continuous monitoring doesn't mean once a year. Continuous monitoring needs to be as instantaneous as you can do that. So we're getting there. It's a lot better today than it was then, and I think FISMA is being interpreted in such a manner that it's more than just the box-checking exercise that many agencies felt it to be.
The fellow who sat here a month ago, Vivek Kundra, there's a quote, if you will search his name on the internet, his quote is that we will never get security through compliance. That's that sounds like a condemnation of some initiatives that I've seen float around the federal government. I don't know. I mean, I think compliance is almost, you know, it's a part of the puzzle. I mean, you have to be aware, you have to be creative, you have to anticipate, but you have to have some of those checkboxes done as well, don't you?
I believe you do. You have to have some benchmarks in place, and I guess I would take the counterpoint on the importance of compliance. I may be a bit biased as I am a former regulator with the government before I became a CIO. But as the malware and the attacks become more and more sophisticated on our systems, and once they get in, getting them out is practically impossible at this point. We need to have more compliance. We need to help the end users be more compliant through tools, through training, and other mechanisms, because if you'll stop and think and just review the breaches that we've had over the past year, I can't think of any of them that weren't directly people related. Somebody opened the door.
Human beings,
People, process, and technology. We have excellent technology. I wish we could buy and configure all that was out there and all that was needed. But even after you do that, you still have to have people who can configure it correctly, who can operate the tools that you buy and put in place, do the analytics, understand what comes out of the monitoring data that you get back. It becomes very, very complicated.
If you want to get more information on some of Horde's opinions, you can find his blogs. He's blogs at several locations. There's one, I think, at AOL that runs your blog. A couple of places run it. And there's a blog, and I think you can type in IT Acquisition Advisory Board and find out about it. And Hort has some very specific suggestions for FedRAMP. Mm-hmm. And I think most of our listeners know that FedRAMP just, is an initiative that started really in the last few weeks here. And it has some baseline security controls for making the transition to the cloud. And I think one of your criticisms was maybe a way to improve it might be through maybe planning for moving existing systems to the cloud. That may be an approach or an addition somewhere down the road. Is that right, Horde?
Well, I am a fan of FedRAMP and the approach that they are using to get more systems into the cloud. Done properly, although difficult, I believe the cloud can provide increased security over many operations now that really can't even afford baseline security on their own. This is a particular blessing for smaller agencies and small companies, small businesses for that matter. The heart of the principle that I like about what they're doing is it forms the basic architecture, and it attempts to solve and to develop questions of a very complex nature that independent people just really have a difficult time coming up with on their own. There's over 2,000 cloud providing services out there. And they, and just think of the differing ways that they can offer those services. So we need some degree of standardization. My first question when I saw the cloud was, having been wrapped up in all of the certification and accreditation of systems, is, well, how do you accredit and certify something that's in the cloud? Because even though it's in the cloud, you as a federal manager still own and are responsible for that system. And you still have the certification requirements on that. So GSA and FedRAMP are helping resolve those.
You know, some listeners may know this, some don't, but you're the former CIO of the Department of Interior, and you had quite a career with the federal government. You attained this President's Distinguished Rank. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think first of all, I'm very proud of that award. I inherited systems in Interior that were tied for last. I won't mention the other agency in terms of security.
Let's tease the audience. It's always good to hear when we were tied from last, and now we'll take a break. That's, we're going to have to leave the people wondering about what happened to old Hort, if he got fired or not, is what I want to know. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Hort Tipton, Executive Director of ISC2. When you come back, we'll find out if he got fired. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Hort Tipton. He's the executive director of a nonprofit called ISC2, ISC2.org, or some people call it ISC squared. They're responsible for the world famous CISSP designation. 80,000 folks all over the world. Must be bunches in the federal government CISSPs as well, I assume. Is that right?
The last count I had on the U.S. government was over 12,000.
12,000 in the federal government. Wow. And so do you guys get together once a year and drink beer? Or what do you do? You have a Congress or convocation? Or what do you do?
Well, with 86,000 members all over the world. And
that's a lot of beer.
we had been trying to bring our members together through member receptions, but as you grow to the extent that we have, that's beyond our reach now. So we've done a couple of things. We've established chapters. We now, in less than 6 months, have over 50 chapters in places that all around the world. Mozambique.
Just like that. Just snap a finger.
We have 150 more in the wings that are waiting to get their legal ratification on that. But when you have that many people, there is a severe need to network, and this is again emphasized, and I think underscored by the embracing of as much social media that has gone on. So we wanted to have a gathering at least on an annual basis of our members, and then go through some very intensive educational tracks, provide them opportunities to hear some luminaries, some really, really brilliant people in the industry, and get those valuable continuing professional educational credits so that we can keep them as members.
My goal in life is to be a luminary, you know. One day I'll be a luminary, but not yet. And so this is called the Security Congress, is that right?
It's our Security Congress. We had our first one last year in Orlando. We had we partnered that, by the way, with ASIS, the traditional security folks, who've been doing this a lot longer than we have. So we are very appreciative to them for partnering up with us. And we had over 21,000 people.
But this is your first conference. You put up a sign and 21,000 people fly in for this?
I'm going to be up right here. A lot of those were the physical security, the traditional people, but we thought it was time to show the convergence between physical and traditional security and the logical security and how it's come together without even people noticing or paying attention to it. And in this year, we want to do that again. It'll be September 10th through the 13th in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Convention Center. And we are looking for up to 25,000 people, which would just about max out the ability of that facility. And you can register for that online at iscsquared.org again. And we strongly encourage all of our members to be there. We'll have over 80 educational tracks. We'll cover everything from application security down to several of the technical hotspots that are out
mobile?
There today. Mobile will be on there as well.
That's what everyone's
social
media, about.
All of the hot topics.
So if you're listening to this on the internet at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can go to ISC, Charlie, ISC2.org, and you can get information on the Security Congress. You can also read a blog by a gentleman named Tipton, T-I-P-T-O-N, and that's what I was doing this morning. I was reading your blog, and a lot of entries there. Of course, your blog's in a couple different places. You have another one over at AOL. But I think it's a good place. A lot of my listeners read blogs. My blog is at my company called Armature, so you can type in John Gilroy blog and you can stumble on it. Some people want to get information on Facebook. Some people want LinkedIn. Some people want radio. Some people want to drop from the sky. And I think it's our job is to provide them the way they want it. And the new generation may just want to be able to read a blog on a handheld device. Mm-hmm. And so what you have to do is you find a parade and get in front of it. And I'm sure that your website is web-enabled or maybe mobile-friendly to allow people to read about this, especially mobile characteristics. So we have a Security Congress coming up. I guess one question I do have is... at Congresses, what's always best, I think, is the face-to-face communication, where you may read Tipton's blog and you may listen to him on the internet and hear his but you want to get him aside and go, now, really, really, what do you really think about the Android operating system? This goes on, doesn't it?
It does for a fact. And again, I have to stress, we are a vendor-neutral thing, so we don't get into product evaluations.
You're completely neutral.
Regardless of what we might think about a particular product, we shy away from that. We teach the technology, and then we test on the technology. But problems are generally what we hear many of our members discussing and asking questions on. And that is a real value, whether it's done through chapters, whether it's done through our member receptions or done through Congress. The face-to-face meetings still are important. It's a virtual world. We're well aware of that. But face-to-face meetings are vitally important.
Yeah, someone I work with told me that another person just responded via email. And I said, well, there's not much nuance in email. I mean, you really don't understand some of the things that are written between the lines as well as you can with a tone of voice or with maybe a question probe that can be asked about something. And I think there's a value there, especially in the security arena where someone may not understand some of the subtleties of an attack, or they may want to have guidance on how to purchase software or how to purchase web security tools or maybe tools to manage the security of their web devices. And that's another interest of yours, I think, is the whole idea of acquisition. And okay, so now I'm charged with moving to the cloud. Or how do I buy cloud services? Okay, now I'm charged with managing 42,000 new iPads. Well, how do I manage those? And I think that's one of your expertise fields as well is working with this acquisition advisory council. Is that right?
Acquisition has become a very, very important piece of security, and I will tie this to a couple of things. One is it puts new importance upon our contracting officers, our contracting people, to make sure that appropriate specifications include the security related tools and specifications that are needed. The other part is with so much of our work outsourced, including huge amounts of software. And then as we go into the cloud, all of a sudden we get these efficiencies in many cases by reducing the workforce. Or if we don't reduce the workforce, we put the people who were doing our testing and evaluation of those type of things in other jobs. So the supply chain has become a very important part. When your system comes back, when your software package is developed and delivered to you, who do you have left on staff to actually evaluate and to give an independent look as to whether or not your specifications have actually been met and just exactly as to how the software actually works? We believe firmly in third-party evaluation of this to avoid conflicts of interest. And when we give away the people who have the skills to actually do that confirmation, it leaves some real question marks in our mind. So acquisition is becoming more and more important because of the channels and the way we acquire products. So our partnership with the Acquisition Council is a good one, and we look forward to working more with them.
Aishu, you've read, and so have I, about hardware being manufactured in China with built-in back doors. And all of a sudden, we outsource it because it's cheaper, and we're letting in the fox into the hen house here, aren't we?
Yeah, and we don't have anybody to even check the hen house when it comes back. That's the point I was trying to get to.
Let's talk a little bit more about the situation you're in when you started at Interior, and you were receiving a failing grade, and you had to come in and change things around.
Interior, like many agencies at that time, this was 2002, operated on the notion that, hey, the internet is a wonderful tool. It is our job to gather information and to provide information. We are a public service organization. And the notion that someone would be nefarious in interacting with that flow of traffic and data was a hard concept to convince them that there really was a threat there. I had one organization that even operated without firewalls, and these were the smartest people in Interior in terms of needing unfettered access to the internet so that they could trade research data with places like Russia. And it didn't take long till we were shut completely off of the internet as a result of the longest running federal lawsuit. And all 86,000 people in Interior were ordered to disconnect. It took me 4 years to convince the federal judge that we had invested, rebuilt, and retooled these organizations to where as their security was adequate. And at that point, we got our bottom tied grade from 12 up to 79.
Wonderful. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about your success story in Interior and maybe lessons learned from that experience, so my listeners, if they're thrown in a similar situation, can maybe find out what Horde did and maybe duplicate that. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Horde Tipton, Executive Director for a nonprofit called ISC Squared. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Horde Tipton. He's the executive director of ISC Squared. They're the folks responsible for the fancy pants designation, CISSP. I once met a lawyer. He gave me his business card. Didn't say anything about being an attorney on that. He had that CISSP in big block letters. He was proud of that. So if you've got that designation, you should be proud. And if you know someone who's got that designation, you can pat them on the back or her in the back and say, good job. Now, we talked about security. We want to talk about nerds and being a nerd. So I have a 10-question test, which is certified, I might add, and accredited, I might add. And we'll find out if you're actually a card-carrying nerd or not. And I hope you have the answers to these questions. Horde, here we go. Question number one, the year you bought your first computer.
1969.
69. Now, that's a record. 270 interviews. That's the earliest one. 69 is pretty good bragging rates.
Probably ought to qualify that just a little bit. That was the year that the HP 35 handheld calculator came out with all the trig functions.
I remember the engineers all bought those.
I was the proudest guy in Union Carbide, the only engineer with the first $500 HP 35.
Yeah, I thought it was around 70, 71 when I first saw those, but 69, that's pretty early. Yeah, that's not bad. Year your first cell phone?
Oh, that was about, my first one actually was a satellite phone. I used to be in firefighting with an Interior back in the early 90s, and we called them bricks.
I remember.
They were very expensive.
So early 90s then?
Early 90s. Early 90s.
That's reasonable. Do you have a Twitter feed?
I had a Twitter feed and then I stopped it. I did it for learning purposes.
You got several blogs, we know that give you some points. Do you use any online personal backup services?
I do not use any cloud backup services. Okay. I do all my backup on remote drives.
And what flavor of a smartphone do you have?
Well, I'll stress again, we're vendor neutral here, but I have had the BlackBerry.
But what kind do you have right now? If we looked in your bag, you see, this is why it's an interesting question. People are scratching their heads wondering, well, he's a security guy. What does he use? Once the listeners what you use. This is when he's at the conference,
well,
they'd ask you.
We have to make the point, it's not necessarily the device you use, it's the security controls and protocols you put around protecting it.
What kind do
you use? I will say I currently use an iPhone.
Okay. Now, number of apps on that bad boy?
252.
Whoa. You're getting the nerdometer scale starting to click, 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 click. What kind of tablet device do you own?
I have an iPad.
iPad. And what kind of social networking sites? This Facebook, LinkedIn, Foursquare, what's your poison?
I am a member on LinkedIn, and I'm in several security groups, and application groups on LinkedIn. I got on Facebook, looked at it, tried it out, did a test drive, and did my best to get off.
And the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Last one was electronic.
You're getting some good, strong nerd points here, you know? If you get a Twitter account, you'll be bolster yourself and you'll be a card-carrying nerd. I'm going to run these numbers through my UNIVAC in my basement, and I'll have a green bar printout for you by noon. You've never heard that, have you?
not in a while.
Never heard a green bar printout by noon. Oh, that means something to someone listening here. What your organization does, it reaches out to young folks and tries to help them with careers and preventing getting in trouble. Tell me about this little voluntary work that some of your folks do at ISC Squared.
Oh, this is more of our heartwarming work. And John, you and I as teachers can relish on the satisfaction that one gets from working and dealing with kids and children. We have reached a stage in the maturity of our company that we want to give something back. Also, we wanted to do more to let the younger generation know that there are good career opportunities in IT and in the IT security world. And we want them to be safe while they're going into the internet. So we developed a program along with an organization in London about 4 years ago called Safe and Secure Online. Their program was called ChildNet. We now brought that to the United States. We have reached, through voluntary efforts of our members, over 70,000 children, and we have yet to have anything except accolades for doing that. We train the members. We prepare them with a teacher coached materials, and their presentations generally go from an hour or two. That generally leads into the teachers who are scared to death of this type of technology. They're very appreciative of it. Next thing we know, they're getting themselves together and they want the presentation for the teachers. Moves over to the PTAs type of thing. And we take great pride in this because this is the only program that I know of that will actually put a face, a security expert, in front of students, classrooms, auditoriums, and actually speak to them and answer their questions personally.
And this is not Uncle Ralph from Atlantis coming in. No, this is a fellow or someone who is working the business, has got 5 years experience, has taken the tests, is certified, and give you an answer, they're going to give you the straight scoop.
And they have had to subscribe to ISC Squared's Code of Ethics, which we take very seriously, and it keeps us all honest.
With continuing education as well. So when these persons do these presentations, they're up to speed with current technology. I have current technology in front of me here. I have a crystal ball, and I'm going to ask you to gaze into it. And in the next 10 years, I want to make you some radical predictions. Do you think in the next 10 years we're going to have what they call a digital Pearl Harbor? You think something's going to blow up serious here? Or do you think folks like you and the CASSP out there are going to be able to battle the bad guys? What's going to happen here? Give us a prediction.
Well, I think we've seen enough very high-profile companies breached in the last year to appreciate the fact that anyone is subject to crime. Anyone is subject to a breach. All we can do at this point is prepare for that, be able to mitigate effectively, and make sure that we've protected the most important stuff that we have. I don't care how many CISSPs you may have. If you don't have good policies, if you don't have business executives that understand what it is you're trying to do, what's at risk, and what the impact is of losing important data and intellectual property from their side.
Risk management,
understand what their risks are. Once they understand that, then they can communicate through their channels to the end users that this is important, and there aren't really consequences for not following policies on this. Computers are useless if you don't provide information, if you don't let people in and out of your ports. We're not running ironclad vaults at this point. So someone has to close that big loop. We get the right level of education in the right spots, and continue to pound on education, user awareness, and keeping people current with this technology. We're dealing with crime. I call it invisible crime at this point. It's always going to be there. We will never eliminate crime. We've had crime since man started walking on land, and it's just that we have to deal with it with a different matter. And we've had policemen for years. Now we have to have cyber cops.
Cyber cops. And what you're trying to do with working with students is sowing the seeds so maybe they realize there's a very practical career in the area of cybersecurity in the federal government, outside the federal government. Anyone with knowledge, in-depth knowledge of cybersecurity, certainly is going to get paid a pretty penny, as they say on the streets. And it's good to advocate that. I would just thank you for coming into the studio today. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Hort Tipton. He is executive director of an organization called ISC Squared. For more information, you can go to ISC2.org. You can find out about their conference coming up in Philadelphia. You can read Hord's blog as well. Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.